Matt, do you feel any differently now about Tyler Haas's chances of ending up on an NFL roster that will keep him out of the Spanish basketball league?
I don't think Tyler Haas has any chance of making an NFL roster. Now, I think that
Maybe he does. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 194. I am your host, Adam Mangum. Matt and I yap about the latest in BYU sports news, including Austin Colley's CFL emergence, Harvey Jackson's admiration for Bronco Mendenhall, the best running back quarterback combo in school history, and the Big 12 Media Day Circus. We also hope that EA Sports will listen to us and start making an NCAA football game again. Again, this is the Rise and Shout podcast. Go to CougarFan.com for all of your BYU sports news. Check us out on iTunes and listen to us right now. Rise and Shout podcast, episode 194, the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, what's up?
What is up?
Well, I'll tell you what's not up, Matt, and that's what we like to call a segue here in the biz. What's not up is EA Sports NCAA football.
Yeah.
Yeah, according to Darren Revelle of ESPN, EA Sports does not have any imminent plans to make an NCAA football game. So I'm going to go straight to the tweet bag, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to the tweet bag.
Oh, tweet bag. Sorry, I was sad.
Oh, you were too sad to respond.
Yeah.
John Brame on Twitter, that's at Johnny Dangerman, he says, will my playing NCAA 14 against Nebraska over and over influence results September 5th? So, Matt.
No, but it sure will be fun.
It sure will be fun. He also tweeted when I tweeted with the BYU Rise and Shout Twitter account. That's at BYU_RiseAndShout if you want to follow us on Twitter. He said, when are they going to do it? He said to Darren Revelle, John did, and I keep playing through this season's games with the teams from 2 years ago. So you're not alone, John. You're not alone.
I think last time I played that game, I was in a dynasty, and it was like 2072.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? I mean, you can go in and you can create whoever you want, right?
Yep.
Put them on your team, you know.
See, that's the funny thing about it is why don't they just make a game? Just make a game with a bunch of generic players in it, and what'll happen is some guy will get on Xbox Live or whatever. Right. And some people will go out and they will make all of the rosters and then people can just download them.
Well, I think the reason, in theory, okay, and that would totally happen, is that I think, you know, EA Sports, NCAA football became kind of the junior right to the Madden, right? It was based off the same engine typically and they tried to differentiate it or whatever else. But I think they want to make it as realistic as possible, and to do so, you have to put in players, right? And that was their downfall in the O'Bannon case, was how can you make the argument that it's not Taysom Hill out there when it's QB, you know, same number, and his running ability is 98? You know what I mean? Like, how can you make that argument?
Yeah, but at this point, isn't it just a silly philosophical debate? Like, it's not going to hurt their sales to put a game out where the players don't exactly match
up. Oh, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you.
So then what are they? What are they? Is it the art? Is it the arts? The artistic value? I mean, forget it. Just make the game.
I totally agree with you. Just make the game every year. Make it a little bit better, and then we can all go out and download those rosters off Xbox Live or whatever the PlayStation version of that is.
Done.
Done. Done and done. We've given you...
Problem solved.
Problem solved, Electronic Arts. Go get her done.
We just took your controversy and made it a non-troversy.
Oh, wow, you just dropped that, and that was terrible. Matt,
I was saving that for later, but I couldn't wait.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you got that out of the way early. Let me say this, though. Let's move on from that and go to something that John also asked about, and he said, thoughts on BYU 50. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on that? On that promotion that BYU does?
It's cool. It will be cool as soon as I get one of those boxes.
Otherwise,
up until then,
cool.
It's just making me angry.
Well, I'm in Minnesota. They're only going to drop one box here. Do you get more than one box there around the D.C. area?
D.C. area?
Oh, you don't live in D.C. anymore.
I haven't for years.
In Texas, how many do they drop?
They did a couple in Texas last year, but they did it in Dallas and in Austin because they were going to do the UT game in Austin.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't do one in Houston. Hello?
Yeah.
Just making me angry.
They did it in the Twin Cities because where else are you going to do it in Minnesota? But by the time I found out about it, it was already claimed. I don't know. It's a little...
In the Twin Cities, don't they refer to that as downtown Minnesota?
No. That doesn't even make any sense. So I don't know. It's gimmicky, but it's fine to me, right? It's nice. You know, it represents the fact that, you know, and we talk about this on our podcast all the time, that the BYU base is pretty unique among in college football because of its national following. You know, that and by national following, I don't mean, you know, Alabama now has a bunch of, you know, kids that are growing up watching Alabama and buying hats, right? We're talking about people that went to the school and or are somehow connected to the program. So, you know, it just kind of highlights that, which is fine. I'm probably not going to, like, take a day off from work or something to go hunt for the box, but...
No, but I will say this, that if the day that it happens in Houston, because I'd be surprised if they don't do one in Houston this year, the day it happens in Houston, if I see it and it's you know within blocks of my office and at a time that I can get down there, I'll sprint for it.
Okay. All right. Cool.
But the odds of all of those things lining up are about zero.
Well, of course, document that on the podcast if it happens. Listeners want to know.
Listen, I probably won't see it till after it happens, and it'll be like across the street, and I'll be all mad. That's the way it's going to go down.
You get mad easily.
I'm mad right now. I'm mad that you just said that.
You need to chill out a little bit, my friend. You know? The football is what, like 52 days away? 53 days away?
Too many.
Too many. Oh, you're a pessimist. So, Matt, let's move on to our next segment. That's the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Matt, this is kind of Cougars in the Pros edition of Cougars in the News. Let's start off with Austin Colley in the Canadian Football League, also known as the CFL. He's playing with the BC Lions and having a very good start to his career. And let's see here. He's got, I had his stats right up here, 11 catches, 149 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a 2-point conversion in his first 2 CFL starts. But this story in the Vancouver Sun really kind of points out that Colley is not talking to the press because of some bad experiences he's had with the press, mainly in the U.S., over his concussion issues. First off, what do you make of his fast start in the CFL?
Not a surprise at all.
No, not a surprise.
You know, I think, you know, you look at he had some time off from the NFL where his body wasn't taking the beating that it would had he been playing all the time. You know, and I think the skills are still there. The football smarts are still there. And the work ethic is obviously still going to be there. So not surprised by that fast start.
And do you understand or do you think he's holding on to too much with his semi-refusal to talk with the badgering Canadian press?
I think he's just sick of talking about it.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
You know, he's been asked this. That's all he gets asked about. And I think his whole point is, I'm okay. If I didn't think I was okay, I wouldn't do this. And can we just play football now? I mean, you got to think about what that whole storyline, and had it not broken the way that it did and when it did, he might still be playing in the NFL.
Yes.
And I'm not, for better or worse or whatever, right? But I think when you look at him, this issue and the continual talking and coverage of this issue is really what kept him out of the NFL. Yes. From his viewpoint.
Yes.
And so why would he want to entertain that whole discussion now that he's found this opportunity in the CFL? Why would he want to keep talking about this? He has moved on. He just wants to play football.
Yeah, yes. And that is clear. Two other observations out of this article in the Vancouver Sun, Matt. Jeff Tedford is his coach. I didn't realize he was up in the CFL. But the other thing that came out of that is Ben Criddle was quoted in the article, who's now of course, former BYU Cougar, now on ESPN 960 radio. He said he is the best wide receiver in BYU history and could have been an all-pro NFL wideout. Let's start with the first part, Matt. True or false, best wide receiver in BYU history, Austin Culley?
I think he definitely belongs in the conversation. You know?
Oh, wow. You just took the politician. Thank you, Mr. Politician. Are you going to be running for office? Take a stand.
Apparently anybody can run for office.
Yes, apparently.
Is Austin Culley the best receiver in BYU football history? Probably.
Yes, I think he is. I think he is. Now, would he have been an all-pro wideout?
Yes.
I think it's very likely had he stayed there with, stayed in Indianapolis, played with Peyton, say he was now playing with another fantastic quarterback in Andrew Luck, that he could have been an all-pro. I think it's highly probable. He's got that skill set, and he's not, the funny thing was, is in my non-BYU friends who are NFL fans, I think because he's white, he was often like, oh, you know, he's kind of Wes Welker. He was not Wes Welker. He had, and a couple of his, one of his touchdowns so far in the Canadian Football League just shows off that he can just blow past people. And that was true at BYU. Unfortunately, I don't think we've had a receiver anywhere close to that skill level since then. We've had some good ones, obviously, but man, not a guy that could just blow past any defensive back who happened to be on him.
Yeah, not like that.
Not like that. So, well, Matt, let's move down to our next Cougar in the pros, and it's not as good news. Tyler Hawes, in his final summer league game, played 7 minutes, got one shot. Far cry from his first summer league game where he led his team with 12 points. Matt, do you feel any differently now about Tyler Haas' chances of ending up on an NFL roster that will keep him out of the Spanish Basketball League?
I don't think Tyler Haas has any chance of making an NFL roster.
Oh.
Now, I think that...
maybe he does. He might be a decent... okay. Never mind. There's nowhere to go there.
I've never been really bullish on Tyler Haas cracking into a NBA roster. And I think he got a good shot here. And I think we all agreed that if he came in, got a window, was able to make a good show, he might be able to get himself onto a roster. But I think that's always kind of been a long shot. I think Tyler Haas is headed for Spain.
I think so too. Unfortunately. Also in the bad news category, but maybe it's not unexpected, NBC Sports reporting that Dennis Pitta will start the year on the PUP list. And that, for the people that... I was going to try to make a joke, but I couldn't figure it out how to do, the old El Nino, which is Spanish for the Nino. But I couldn't figure it out. Unable to perform list, right? Players unable to perform. Mm-hmm. So he will not likely begin the season with Baltimore. So Matt, is this kind of expected based on the timing and severity of his injury, right?
Yeah, this is just a formality almost at this point, right? I mean, I think we were all kind of expecting that. I mean, really at this point, you just got to be thinking about what does this look like long term for Austin Culley.
Now it's your turn to mess up. We're talking about Dennis Pitta, buddy. Yeah,
I don't
stick
that's
that.
I don't know. I'm just gonna stop now.
Yeah, you should probably stop. I'll finish this podcast by myself.
At least they played at the same time. Tyler Haas never played football. I don't even think he played football in high school. You said NFL.
Hey, I hear he's mean NCAA football player. That's rumors, but I don't know. Just the rumors going around. So, Matt, let's move into some football talk, some BYU football talk. Harvey Jackson, a former Cougar, just played 1 year at BYU after transferring to the Y from Nebraska. He came out and wrote kind of a, I hesitate to call it this, but I've been calling it this in my head all day, so I'll say it, a love letter to Bronco Mendenhall. So, Matt, what do you make of basically the guy who, I mean, played at BYU for 1 year? I don't want to say he made no impact last year. I mean, he played, but it didn't make a massive impact. To basically go on and basically call Coach Mendenhall just this terrific human being.
Yeah, I think when you talk to a lot of players that played for Mendenhall, they feel that way about him. Yep. You know, BYU didn't work out for you know, maybe the way that Harvey Jackson had hoped. You know, that doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily a reflection of his relationship with the head coach. And I think when Mendenhall talks about stuff he's trying to do there and all that, I think that makes sense. Now, I don't know that this is some recruiting bombshell as some people seem to want to make it out to be. I don't think it's that. I think it's a nice gesture on behalf of a player who, wanted to make sure that he shared his appreciation for what a coach had done for him, you know, which is a nice thing to do.
What I've noticed, Matt, is if you go to any of the message boards, this is being used as fire for both the pro and anti Bronco camps.
Yeah, which is awesome.
The pro camps are saying, see, you know, here's this kid, didn't have to do this, and this is going to really affect recruiting. I'm with you. It's a nice to have. And
Come on. What are you going to go into a recruit's house and be like, look at this nice note?
No. You're not going to use it. But it's like when a national story comes where they say Mendenhall's a good coach, which most of the national writers call him that, right? I mean, it's not something you're going to walk in on a poster board. Hey, Coach Mendenhall's awesome. But it's something that, you know, if a recruit reads this and goes, oh, wow, Coach Mendenhall that had that kind of effect on their life, I'd say it is a positive. But I would say that what's even funnier than the pro Bronco camp saying that this is some huge, you know, recruiting boon is the opposite, saying this just proves their point that Bronco is not focused enough on football. What? It doesn't prove that at all, right?
You know, spent so much time trying to be a good person. I just want draft picks.
Yes, I want him to turn around and do NFL draft picks. So
it's just silly.
Yeah, it's silly. It's a good gesture by Harvey, and I'm glad he had a terrific experience at BYU. That's awesome. In another nationally reported story, Matt, CBS Sports put together the most disrespected football teams in the country list. Okay, so we're going to go down this list. Mississippi State at number 5, BYU, I've heard of them, at number 4, Georgia Tech at number 3, Kansas State at number 2, and Missouri as the most disrespected. Matt, I'm not going to go through his kind of convoluted explanation of respect. Is BYU football, that program, disrespected?
Now, no, I this is clickbait, but yeah. That's all this is, right? But when I think about disrespected programs in college football, I think what he's really getting at here is here are some programs that aren't getting the credit they deserve, right? And I think that's really what he's getting at. You want to talk about disrespected programs, just flat out disrespected, I'd start with a program like, you know, San Diego State. Nobody takes them seriously. You know, Wyoming.
But it'd have to be a team that actually deserves respect, right? You can't be disrespected if you don't deserve respect.
If you don't have any respect in the first place. I mean, you decided to go to Wyoming.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you don't even have any self-respect. So, yeah. You know, I is it one of the top five most disrespected programs in college football? If a lot of BYU fans think so.
But the media loves BYU.
You know, I think Mississippi State gets into that group pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Missouri, I mean, they've been in two straight SEC championship games, and I think people take them seriously. I know they were picked to finish third in the SEC East. I don't think that's a sign of disrespect. I think it's just a sign of they've got some turnover on their roster, right?
Well, listen, we can, you know, joke about SEC and how people are obsessed with the SEC stuff, but it's a tough conference, and they, you know, they do beat each other up a little bit. So, you know, it's almost at a point you get into the top 2-3 in one of those divisions, like writers still could be saying you may have a shot. It's just that the teams are very close together. I think towards the top of that conference, you know, there's a handful of teams that are pretty close together in what's the word I'm looking for, in skill level or whatever. And you know, to say they're picked third, is that like this total, you know, lack of respect for their program and their players? I'm not going to get behind that real quickly.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get behind that BYU is. I mean, we've put together these fantastic schedules. The power conferences consider us, for the most part, a power conference for scheduling purposes out of conference. I mean, to say we're disrespected, I mean, the biggest point of disrespect is no Power 5 conference has invited BYU to join it yet. I mean, maybe that's your angle, but, you know, we'll move on from that. An interesting article by Jeff Call in the Deseret News, Matt, about senior leadership. There is definitely that in spades with this Cougar team on both, especially on the offensive side of the ball, with some seniors who are set up to have great seasons. It goes back, and Mitch Matthews has been pitching this since spring football, talking about when he was a freshman and there was Max Hall, Dennis Pitta, Andrew George, and others that helped guide BYU to an 11-2 record. He says he hasn't seen that kind of leadership up until now. How much value do you think it is to have some of your best players be seniors and have that leadership? Do you think it's overstated, understated, or do you think Matthews is perfectly on point?
I think it's pretty much on point here. I mean, that's the, you know, especially in a college program, and you talk about, you know, how often, especially during the off season, that coaches can interact with players. I mean, the strength and conditioning coach is really who they spend the most time with, right?
Right.
So, you know, that the coaching staff doesn't get the access to these players, say, that they would at the professional level. So a lot of what drives the team cohesion, a lot of what drives people's participation in kind of an off-season regimen, a lot of what drives, you know, people buying into the team and buying into what the coach is selling and buying into, you know, kind of sacrificing themselves for the good of the team and trusting that your teammate will take care of his assignment, and so you don't have to worry about that. You can just focus on what you have to do. A lot of that is done, I think, among the players at this level.
Right.
And so having real solid leaders in roles on the team that are important and that, you know, are playing, you know, you like a Taysom Hill, you know, you got people out there with that are kind of the best players on the team and are also the older players on the team. I think that does give you an advantage, and you know, I think it could be overstated, but I think this is a pretty good analysis of how key that leadership can be for this team going into this type of a season. And this is going to be a tough road.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree to a certain level. I think these things they're sports writer fodder, right? They love these kind of quotes. And I would say it can be overstated. What I do think is clear, though, is you've got a couple of very fiery guys at the top of this offense in Hill, highly competitive in Mitch Matthews, Jamal Williams, that I think on the offensive side of the ball, it's very clear that these guys are not only the best players, but they're running the show, right, from a player mm-hmm. perspective. I think on the defense, you don't hear quotes like this, right? You got Bronson Kafusi. Is he that kind of leader? I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see on the defensive side of the ball. Matt, another story in the Deseret News comes from Carter Williams. He talks about this. It's a first in a three-part series about the state of college athletics in Utah, which I'm really not that interested in. But he does talk about being able to compete financially. Now, you and I have talked a lot about conference expansion. We're going to talk about it a little bit here in a bit as it pertains to Big 12 Media Day. So, Matt, my question to you is, without being a member of a P5 conference, do you think that the lack of financial resources given by a P5 conference doom BYU to some future day of obscurity if they don't get into one?
You know, maybe. I mean, because it all does come down to money, right? And yes. Could the financial landscape get to a place where BYU won't be able to keep up with the Joneses? I think so. But I would hope that if that starts to become the reality, that Tom Holmo or whoever figure something out.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about doomsday scenarios, right, where the P5 basically forms their own division of NCAA football, right, and everybody else is locked out. Because right now, those conferences are signing these mega contracts for their TV rights, and it is trickling down. It's crazy to me that, in this capitalistic society that we have, that Vanderbilt and Iowa State and Texas Tech are getting benefits that, quite frankly, they could never get on their own, right?
Silly, right?
But that is the way it works. And, Vanderbilt and Texas Tech are certainly not going to give their seats up at the table. Or Rutgers, good golly. But anyway, yeah.
The birthplace of college football, Adam.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to have a little bit of respect.
Yeah, it's also the birthplace of those Roy Rogers restaurants. That didn't work out so well. Look, how long has that been sitting under that heat lamp? You remember those trips along the Jersey Turnpike as a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, those were
Jersey
gross.
Turnpike is quite an experience.
Yes.
I recommend it. If you haven't done it before, it's something you need to do in your life at least once.
Yes, you'll have no idea, which, by the way, New Jersey has some beautiful parts to it. You will not see any of them on the Jersey Turnpike. You will see none of them.
No, it is the Garden State.
Yes, it is. It is the Garden State. So, Matt, another thing that came up this week in BYU football, BYU Sports Nation and our friends of the podcast, Spencer Linton and Jerem Jordan, discussed the best quarterback running back combos in BYU history. Matt, I wanted to, we've drafted recently QBs and running backs and stuff, so we're not going to redo all that. Off the top of your head, who would you say are the best? Is the best running back quarterback combo in BYU history?
Max Hall, Harvey Unga.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like it's too early to say, that the best combo is currently on the roster.
No. I completely agree with you. I think saying that it's Hill and Williams is kind of silly. They need another year together. Last year they didn't really even play together hardly, right?
Right.
So I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm intrigued. The problem is, in any discussion like this, how much do you weight the QB and how much do you weight the running back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does somebody like Luke Staley, who maybe put together the best running back season in BYU history in 2001, does Brandon Doman get carried along with him? And by the way, that it's a little silly what I'm saying, because Brandon Doman had a heck of a year, right? People may remember him as a failed offensive coordinator. Don't sleep on the fact that he had a fantastic year in 2001. That being said, his year ranks as the 19th best passing season by yards in BYU history. So that seems unfair. Or do you get like something where it's like whoever was the running back for Detmer, I'm intrigued with Hall and Unga. I think Doman and Staley would be my pick, but I could be persuaded.
See, when I look at this, I look and I say, okay, so what was the offense doing, right? When any particular duo was out on the field, right? And so there's a couple that jump out at you, but when I look at Unga, you know, being all-time leading rusher, right? One of the best running backs in BYU history.
Yes, clearly.
And at the same time, you've got receivers breaking receiving records. Now, I know that's a receiving record, but listen, like, I couldn't get back there and be the quarterback and Austin Colley rack up the yardage that he did. You know, yeah. What I mean, it takes a quarterback to get to that space. So when I look at overall offensive performance from both of those positions, that's where I land on Max Harvey Unga. Now, I could be convinced Doman and Staley. You know, you could even, you know, I always wanted to fall back to these guys, Sarkisian, Brian McKenzie. Brian McKenzie had two really solid years.
Yeah, he's not in the, I love McKenzie, but he's not in the conversation any more than Leke Haemuli is, right? I mean, he had a really great season during the national championship year, but you can't put him in the class of Unga or Staley.
No, probably not. But you know what I'd really like to do, even though these two guys didn't really play together, like their great seasons weren't synced up, but they did overlap a season.
Who's that?
What? Jamal Willis, Ty Detmer.
Yes. That would be kind of cheating.
But you know,
that
it's would totally be... cheating, right? Because in 91, I mean, Willis wasn't Willis yet. You know, so it's totally cheating, but that may be, if you just look at being on the roster at the same time, if I could take both those guys in their prime, that's probably who I take.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I'm talking 1996, and this is a little cheating, I'm taking Ronnie Jenkins. I know he wasn't the featured back that year, but
he was the better running back.
Who has the most carries in a season for BYU? Little trivia question that was in Greg Rebell's quiz this week.
I don't know.
Well, let me double check this, but I believe the answer is Ronnie Jenkins. I mean, because of the fact that he had kind of a chaotic BYU career and played just two full seasons, people kind of forget just how good he was. Yeah, 1998. He had 252 carries, which is the most of any BYU player ever. Do you know what is number two on the list? Holy shnikes.
No.
Taysom Hill, 2013.
Had Ronnie Jenkins had a full career at BYU, a little less of a rocky experience, I think he would be, hands down, the best running back to have ever come through.
I don't know. It's still tough. I mean, he had great numbers, but I'm not sure they beat Staley and Unga, even if he sticks through it.
Well, and he was a different kind of a running back, too. He wasn't a bruiser. I mean, he could be.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a real big guy, but he was very strong.
Yes, and he was also, in his freshman season, a heck of a kick returner, too.
Oh, so, my gosh, yes.
So he never broke one for a touchdown in his BYU career, but... He was somebody that was feared and a good decent receiving back as well. Well, Matt, let's move on to something that I like to call the circus, or also known as Big 12 Media Day. So let's talk about this for a second. Now I'm going to read a quote here. Okay, this is from Larry Bowlesby, the commissioner of the Big 12. All right. He, of course, is asked very early on in his opening statements this week about conference expansion. Now, this is the money quote from Bowlesby. It is my understanding that at the present time, the majority of our presidents and chancellors believe that 10 is the right number for us. There are those that believe that we should get larger, and they feel strongly about it. There are those who believe that we should stay at 10, and they feel strongly about it. And there are probably four or five in the middle who are persuadable one way or the other. Is this guy writing speeches for like Obama or something?
Like, the math, listen, the math doesn't even make sense.
No, it doesn't. A majority of
our
president...
If there's four or five in the middle, then and some on both ends, then the majority does not feel one way.
Yes. And it is my understanding... Does that mean he hasn't talked to all of the university presidents and athletic directors?
I've heard. Just I check on Twitter.
Yeah, I've read some media
reports. CBS Sports has reported.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. So here's my evidence against what he said, besides the fact that you point out his math is terrible, which fits right in with the Big 12 because there's 10 teams in it.
Well, right.
Oklahoma president David Boren, who we discussed a couple weeks ago on the podcast, he said he wants 12 teams. Pinkel, the coach of Missouri, who we'll get to here in a minute, wants 12 teams. Now, he's not speaking for his athletic director or president, but let's just assume Missouri's in that camp. And then Gundy, I'm a man. I'm 40. And he is older than 40 now. Is he 50 now? I'll have to look that up. He says he wants 12. Now, again, he doesn't speak for the athletic director or the university president. So Matt, who's against it? Who is this majority, quote unquote? And by majority, what he means is
the commissioner
three
of the Big 12.
Shouldn't the media there in place absolutely hammered him for that answer? I mean, you point out the math problem, also the fact that it is my understanding, like, he should have been hammered, right? And it's just kind of like everyone's like, oh, you know, it goes. I don't know.
Well, that seems to make sense. Some people like it, some people don't, some people can't decide. Sounds about right.
So Bowlesby then went on to say that again, in his political speak, I think we'll have the prerogative at some point in time to consider and implement a playoff game if we choose to. What? I don't even know what that sentence means.
It's all non-answers. This is all non-answers, which can mean one of two things. One is they're working out some deal in the background and nobody wants to talk about it, so I'm just going to do this non-answer stuff. The other one is we have no interest in doing this, but we know you're going to keep asking about us, so we're just going to feed you this line. Unfortunately, we have no idea which of those two scenarios we're looking at.
So their failed slogan from last year, one true champion.
Didn't work out.
Is being replaced by two, Matt. Two that are, quite frankly, equally as bad.
So wait a minute, hold on. Before you even tell me what they are.
Yes.
We had one slogan that was one true champion that didn't make any sense.
But then
and after last
champions.
Year's experience, they've decided we can't decide on one slogan, so we're going to have two.
Yes. It's marketing genius.
This is just, you can't write, you can't make this up.
No, you can't. Some days I feel like we shouldn't join the Big 12 because it's going to one day just cease to exist. But anyway, the two slogans are Every Game Matters, which I don't – that's such garbage to me. Like, Every Game Matters as opposed to what? Other conferences where it doesn't? Are you going to tell me the SEC?
If you're the Sun Belt, none of the games really matter.
Okay, fine. And then – classic rivalries with no divisions. Like, who wrote this
crap?
See,
these are both...
They're terrible.
This is all just marketing, trying to be like, hey, no, it's not what you think. These games are important.
These games
and we're
super
preserving
important.
The rivalries. You like that, right?
Yeah, the rivalries, like Texas A&M and Tech...
Wait a minute. Nah, crud.
That one's gone. What rivalries? I mean, tell me a big 12 rivalry besides Oklahoma... And Texas. Tell me one.
Nuts. You took the one I was going to use.
Tell me one you're going to flip the TV on and go, oh, that's on today. I got to watch it. Name the game. Baylor, Texas Tech?
Kansas State?
Kansas State? Like, no.
Rock, Chalk, Jayhawk.
I mean, to those programs, I get that it's a big deal, right? And I'm not trying to downplay those things, but quite frankly, Kansas bigger rivalries. Missouri, they left too. Oh, well. So I wouldn't play up the rivalries, Big 12, if I were you. Well, let's move on to Pinkel.
Two true slogans.
Two true slogans, one true champion.
Well, unless there's two.
Unless there's two, which means there's more than one. But a majority...
Twice. We have twice the champions of the other conferences.
A majority of our... we have twice the champions. That should be their slogan. That should be their slogan. We have twice the champions. Suck on that, SEC.
We have so many champions, we don't even fit into your puny playoff system.
That's right. That's right. Deal with that, SEC. Did you just make a fart noise?
I kind of did.
Wow.
Kind of did. I got carried away.
We've descended in that. Thanks, George Lucas, for
joining. A little carried away. I wish
the podcast.
You know, that's how Bowlesby should have ended his comments. He should have been like, you know what? We don't even need all that, so...
Yes, that would have been awesome.
That's pretty much what he did. That is pretty much what he did.
Yes, that is pretty much what he did. Well, Matt, let's return to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Andre Hutchins, that's at AC underscore Hutchins on Twitter, says, thoughts on Mizzou's Pinkel comments. Wow. I read that wrong, but it doesn't matter how I read it. It's not good. Gary, we're starting to giggle like little girls here. Let's pull ourselves together, Matt. Pull yourself.
All right. I'm good.
Pinkel. All right. Gary Pinkel, the coach of the Missouri Tigers. Come on, man. I'm trying to do a podcast here. Get serious.
All right. I'm okay.
All right.
Okay, I'm all right, Coach. I'm ready to go.
All right, he hit on a bunch of topics, including, he says, and I quote, I think all independents should join a conference as a general rule. I didn't say Notre Dame in particular, everybody. Well, like, who is he talking about? Maybe? You don't have independents in the NFL. That makes no sense. Leagues are leagues. Really? Because I thought you just ditched your league to go to the SEC. I just think it's difficult to assess a team that's not in the league. Translation, their schedule might be better than ours. It's nothing against Notre Dame. It's just my opinion. Now, granted, to be fair to Coach Pinkel, he's getting asked a question and he has to provide an answer, right? I don't know what the question was because all we've got is what the reporter had in there. Matt, do you think he's wrong? Do you think... Yeah, don't you think BYU agrees with him?
I think BYU does agree with him, but I think his comparisons are crazy.
The NFL one is terrible.
It's just silly.
In that,
it's just silly.
The NFC East doesn't have a championship game at the end, right? And they have a full playoff. It's apples and oranges. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And you know, again, he. Down the road, he also thinks everyone should have a championship game. I think we all agree with that too, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. But you gotta remember this guy. He doesn't sit around talking about the conference expansion and alignment and all this as much as fans do.
No.
He thinks about it some.
No.
But then he's asked to make a comment on it, so he's got to have an opinion. So he's like, well, this is kind of what I think.
Yeah.
He's not trying to make a statement with this.
No, he is not. This is not. This is not bulletin board material for BYU in November. By the way, if they need bulletin board material by November, we're in trouble. And to play Missouri, to play an SEC team. But my point is, he's just saying, I think his comments are kind of nonsense, which either means that's his opinion, and I just happen to disagree with it, or he hasn't really put a lot of thought into this. And like you said, he's being asked a question and he responds. You know, again... I don't really care one way or the other what Gary Pinkel thinks about the independents. I think Notre Dame and BYU's schedule stack up pretty nicely against anybody's in the country, right?
This year, absolutely.
So I think if either of those teams go undefeated, which I'm not predicting that either Notre Dame or BYU go undefeated, but either of them went undefeated, I think they will rightfully belong in the top four. Right.
If they run the table, yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we talked about that before. BYU schedule such that it's as good as any P5 schedule, or maybe not as good, but as good as most P5 schedules. And Notre Dame's always is. I mean, they funny enough, it weakens it a little bit by playing those five ACC games. Oh, shots fired. But actually, probably not, because you know that what they replace Purdue.
But I'll tell you what, I always think it's funny when a team wants to talk about, like, oh, well, BYU's schedule's weak or whoever's schedule's weak. It's like you're on that schedule. You realize,
yes, that
you're a piece of that schedule.
You're kind of bashing yourself when you do that.
Unless you think that you're one of only one or two good teams on the schedule.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, all of this, if it were a meritocracy, which it is not, BYU and Boise State would already be in P5 conferences, right?
Yep.
They've earned that right by their play. For Boise, it's a shorter window and maybe a higher peak or longer peak. For BYU, the window's longer. The peak was quite a long time ago, but still, certainly deserved to be in there. And, you know, but Pinkel's acting like it's a meritocracy, but it's not, right? That's just not how NCAA football works. You don't always get, you know, if he wants it to be the NFL, then what they really need to do is, you know, find a better playoff system than even four, right?
Oh no, you blow up all the conferences if yes. What you want is something akin to the NFL.
Yes, yes. You blow up the conferences, have as many people play each other as you can. Probably
you set it up by region.
Yeah,
you pay the players.
Yes, yes, all those things. But anyway, you know, Big 12 Media Day. Let me put it this way. You know, Pinkel obviously coming from a former Big 12 team and some of the SEC comments. But as I watch all this swirl around, Matt, my basic thought is nothing is going to happen with conference expansion until the TV contracts get near to being renegotiated. Right. Just right. Nothing's going to happen. The Big 12 is sitting there, you know, and if you believe Bowlesby, seven teams are for expansion, eight teams are against expansion, and there's like four or five in the middle.
And then another six teams.
So I'm.
And then maybe, one other one.
Maybe he's talking about former Big 12 Southwest Conference teams too.
Lots
of teams. Arkansas. Missouri, you know,
so
Texas
many
A&M.
Teams.
You know, he's thinking broader, Matt, than you and I. Broader.
Teams for days, just so many teams.
So many teams. Well, Matt, that's all I've got for this this week's show. Anything you want to add before we sign off?
Actually, I do have one more thing.
Oh,
so I was listening to Mike and Mike this morning on my commute.
Okay.
And they're interviewing Steve Spurrier.
I've heard of him.
Okay, yeah, you may have heard of the head ball coach.
Yes.
Steve Spurrier. And Steve Spurrier makes, and I wish I don't have sound of it, but Steve Spurrier, they start asking him, you know, do you feel like it's merited for you or other coaches to take heat for not running pro-style offenses or offenses that better prepare players for the NFL? Do you feel like that's part of what you're supposed to be doing? And he's like, no, listen. We're not paid to prepare guys. This is what he said. We're not paid to prepare guys for the NFL. We're paid to win football games. And the first thing I thought about was the heat that Bronco Mendenhall takes over the draft and all this stuff. None of that stuff matters unless you're winning football games. And I think you go to any – now, and I know people look at Spurrier now, but if you – Spurrier's got a history of being a pretty solid coach at the college level.
And to be fair – he had a lot of players, has had a lot of players drafted in the NFL.
Right. And so I feel good taking his saying that his feelings, his statement there is not necessarily universally representative of how top college coaches feel, but at the end of the day, you know, do you think those guys really care?
No.
No. All they want to do is win. Just win.
And this is, you know, obviously there's a lot of fair criticisms of Bronco Mendenhall, as there is, quite frankly, of any coach. Everyone's going to be flawed. And the last three 8-5 seasons, I think, are the biggest indictment, right, of the recent past. And the NFL draft, I get it. It can affect recruiting, and I believe that's true. I believe that opponents recruiting the same players could say, hey, you know, we've had like 10 NFL players. They've had like two. But here's the thing. if you produced a team of 20 NFL players and you lost and you were 2-10, and by the way, 20 is an exaggeration, but there are teams that will go 2-10 and have three or four guys picked. It happens. Mm-hmm. Or at least maybe not picked, but make rosters that next year. You get fired. No one's going to turn around and say, oh, well, he got three guys in the NFL that year. And that's the problem what I have with the argument that Bronco, this is a symbol of his failure and he's got to do better. He's got to win. End of story. You win, nobody cares about any of this other stuff. The reason it's a bigger story is because they've been 8-5 for three straight seasons. Not that they have. And by the way, Zeke Lansa and Kyle Vannoy just got drafted in the last three seasons. So, you know, I don't know. I'm with you. These guys don't care. Most of them do not care. And Spurrier's the kind of guy that I don't think he's going to say that he doesn't care, but he really does. Pretty straight shooter, I think.
Yep.
All right. Well, that has been enough from us this week. For all of your Cougar news, check out CougarFan.com, the best news aggregator about BYU sports on the web. You, of course, can check us out on Twitter at BYU_Reichelt. That sounded kind of creepy, but it wasn't meant to be. But you can definitely read stuff that we tweet on Twitter. And also, give us a rating on iTunes if that's how you're listening to us. And we're grateful for you, for the listeners and for you guys listening and interacting with us. We'll be back again next week and with hopefully an awesome guest, so you won't just have to listen to us. So thanks again for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!